Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Upgrade your kitchen today with Clearview Cabinetry. We offer a great selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and with cabinet accessories to match your unique style. View our selection of Clearview Cabinetry on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. We're gonna save the world tonight. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean show on UK Health Radio. I'm Jarvis Smith. How have you all been? How's your summer been? It's been a bit wet and miserable, hasn't it, in the UK? But never mind, never mind. That doesn't. We don't need sunshine to make us happy. We need life and all of our life experiences. But it's great to be back. The reason I asked about summer is I was away visiting rainforests in Bolivia, which we're working on a project to try and protect some areas of the Bolivian rainforest and try and reforest areas. And it's a very, very exciting project, which I'll tell you more about as that develops. But today's show is going to be, funnily enough, I was just listening to Radio 4 and there was a subject on there called clothing passports, which is obviously related to fashion and labels. So today's guest, I'm going to get into that conversation with him. We've got an extraordinary guest today. I was introduced to him through a very good friend of mine who's been a sustainable fashion advocate for, you know, two decades. And I said, so I called her up and I said, look, I'm looking for dot, dot, dot. Do you know anybody? And she came back and she said, you must contact this gentleman. His name is Stuart Trevor. He is the founder of All Saints. I've got a little bit of info here I'm going to read out before I introduce him. Stuart Trevor started his career as a fashion design student in 1985. Aged 19, won the Smirnoff Fashion Awards at the Royal Albert Hall and became the first ever designer and buyer for Reiss, which we all remember, I'm sure. Aged 28, he founded All Saints. Now, many of the clothes that feature each week in the top 10 bestseller list of the high street brand today were designed by Trevor over 20 years ago. This is a couple of quotes that he said. I'm going to read them out. All Saints was my baby. I created that look from scratch, all inspired by my teenage years. That best-selling biker jacket started out as a vintage find. The Ram Skull was my first logo design, a cross between my love of animals, pirates and punk rock, and it took over the world. I love that. Stuart, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming to join us. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm great. Yeah, very good. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Not at all. There's a few more bits here I was going to read out, and then I thought, actually, I'm not going to because I want to hear it from you. But let's just talk about where this all started for you. So, you know, look, you were 19 and won a Smirnoff Fashion Awards. That was pretty big deal back in the day. Yeah? Do you remember that moment? Do you remember kind of, you know, did it give you a sense or feeling that I'm doing something right? What was your response to that?
It was, it's quite a funny story about it all because, you know, when you're a kid, you know, 19 years old, and I have young interns that work with me nowadays, and they come to me and everyone is full of anxiety and convinced that they're, you know, they want to be a success or they want to, you know, prove themselves and I have a couple of kids that turn up that look amazing, but they're, and then when I meet their parents, the parents are like, you know, oh, they're so anxious about whether they've got it right or whether they, and I'm like, God, they're just so bang on it. But as a young kid, I I was exactly like that. And the process for the Smirnoff Fashion was, it was the biggest thing that you could possibly win at that time. And they would ask every fashion student, every college, every university around the world to apply for this. And out of, I think, 10,000 people, I think about 20 get selected from their sketch that they make with little swatches and a drawing of the outfit they want to make. They get sent, I think it was £250 or £500 to buy the fabric, to get to make, the outfit or whatever. And I was one of those lucky kids that, they loved the sketch and they loved the little swatches. I'd really gone to town on it as well. It was kind of funny because back in those days as well, there were no fabric shops, or there was, used to get very, very limited, especially in Nottingham, about the sort of fabrics that you could get. So I actually got swatches of linen and I stitched pinstripes onto them with a sewing machine, and I put these swatches in. And then when they sent me the check for 250, 500 quid or whatever, I suddenly showed it to some of my peers at the uni, and they were laughing because they were going, how are you going to create that fabric? Like, obviously I had no idea when I put the first sketch down that I was going to actually have to create this fabric with the stitch lines on it, because it was a black linen with ecru sort of stitches sewn on a sewing machine. So what I did is I got the phone book out and I contacted a quilting factory in Nottingham, and they agreed to stitch the lines on the fabric for me. So I got over that hurdle and I made the outfit. And I wasn't even sure whether I would get it all done on time, but I got it done on time and I sent it off. And then, I think they sent me invites and they asked me, did you want anyone to come? And I was thinking, yeah, I remember everyone, I rang my mum the day before and said, would you like to go to the Royal Albert Hall? She said, why? And I said, well, I'm in a competition and I'm, and she's like, why are you only asking me now? And I said, well, I didn't think you'd be bothered. And she's like, are you kidding? And so when I got her the tickets, but they were, because I'd got them last minute, they were up in the gods, like, at the worst seats in the house. And I was down in the little bowl at the front, in front of the stage, and Vivian Westwood got up and they announced that, out of 2,500 students or 25,000, that there's only one of them will walk away with the Designer of the Year award and all this sort of stuff. And of course, then something like, I can't remember whether it's 20 or 30 or 40 different outfits come out, and mine came out. And it looked really great. And at the end, they announced that I was the winner of the Menswear Day Award. And also, and I remember them calling my name out. And I just sat there like that. And I looked at the, the kids that I was from, that I was with. And they just kind of like were going, get up, get up. And I was like kind of really in shock. And all I could hear is my mum screaming her heart out at the top of the, up in the gods, screaming, that's my son, that's my son, all this sort of stuff. And it was just kind of hilarious. And I went up and got the award, but it was completely shocking to me because I didn't expect to win anything. I'd never won anything before in my life. And I was amazed that I'd actually got through to the final, never mind winning it. But and I went home. I didn't even bother going to the after party because I had no money. And I think I had to get back to my mum's or something, and it was in central London. I thought, if I don't leave now, so I never went to the after party, never really saw anyone, didn't know what a success it was. And then the following week, David Rees, the owner of Rees, rang the college every day for 2 weeks. And in the end, the head of faculty said, you've got to ring this guy back. And I was like, I'd already been offered a job with Paul Smith over the summer. I'd won a Paul Smith.
Paul Smith was another Nottingham iconic brand, right?
Well, he was the only reason I went to Nottingham to do. Yeah. I was going to go to St. Martin's or London College of Fashion. I got accepted at London College of Fashion, but I went to Nottingham because I thought if I go there, I'd have a chance to meet Paul Smith and I'd, potentially be able to get a job with him. And I did. I won this. I was in the finals of a Paul Smith Mont Blanc competition, and he offered me an internship over the summer. So I was like, I'm not going to bother with Reese. But they made me go down. Well, they made me call him back, and he told me he's going to send me the money to get the train down to London, and I have to come and see him, David Reese. So I went to his shop on the King's Road, and he just, I brought the outfits and I laid them out, and he went, yeah, I don't need to see them. And he handed me an envelope, and I opened it, and he said, open it. And I opened it. There was £500 in it and a ticket to Italy with my name on it. And I was like, what's this? And he said, oh, I want you to come with me to Italy next week. It's Pittiwoma, the world's number one menswear fair, and you're going to stay in the best hotels in the world and eat in the best restaurants in the world, and we're going to go to the number one menswear fair in the world, and we're going to go to the best factories in the world, and you're going to buy fabric from them and take it to my factories, and you're going to design stuff, and it's going to be in my shop. And I just looking at him going, I'm going to work with Paul Smith. He goes, the best thing is you don't have to tell Paul Smith. He said, you can come on this trip, and if you don't like it, you can go away. He said, but I think you'll like it. And I went on that trip, and I never looked back. So,
Wow. What an amazing story. I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. So you went on this trip. What made you change your mind? I mean, what was it that really stuck out for you?
Well, I got on really well with David. He was a very funny, charming guy, but he was completely, and when we got on the plane, he asked me this question. He said, what's the big look for next winter? And they don't teach you anything like that at college. So I was kind of like, I just thought about an external tutor that used to come in, and he used to wear trousers that had little zips in the ankle. And he used to wear you'll never believe this, but back in the 80s, there was no such thing as a hoodie. Like, no one knew what a hoodie was. They didn't exist in England. But he had one that he'd bought from Levi's in America on a trip in New York. And he had this hoodie on. So I had to describe the hoodie to David Reese on the plane. I said, it's like a cardigan, but it's got like a zip instead of buttons. And it's got like a hood with little strings. And it's got pockets on it, but they're like a kangaroo pocket. And it's got like knitted cuffs, and he was. It sounds ridiculous nowadays because the hoodie's like probably the best selling garment in the world. But in those days, no one knew what it was. And I was describing this to David Reese, and he was like, "Oh, it sounds interesting." And when we arrived in Florence, he took me around all the best stores, like designer stores, and in the window on the mannequins, they had all the latest collections from designers that had just come out, like Dries Van Noten and Dirk Bickenbergs and all that, and you'll never guess what, it was all hoodies and like trousers with little zips in, and he was like, this boy's a genius, I can't believe it. He like, couldn't believe that I'd predicted all the looks, and it was I was so convinced that he was going to find me out as a fraud, and then it turned out that I was this genius that knew the answers to everything. So He ended up basically offering me a full-time job there and then, and he bought me a red Gaultier double-breasted blazer that was about £700, which would be about the equivalent of £10,000 in today's money or something. Yeah. He bought me that if I would come and work with him rather than Paul Smith. So I was suckered in.
Absolutely brilliant. What a story. I mean, that's just monumental. What role did you play when you went into Reese? And when was this? This was in, what, 86 or something? 85, 86, yeah. So literally straight after.
It was a week after.
What role did you go into? You went in as a designer, obviously, but...
Yeah, he'd never had... back in those days, Reese was a multi-brand retail store. So they used to buy from, like, Stone Island and Armani and... denim brands like Liberto and things like this. And he used to just do a little bit of his own label. So I and they were having financial difficulties, and I was like, why are we buying from all these different brands? Why don't I just design everything? And I remember him saying, like, oh no, don't be stupid, you'd have to be a real designer if you were. And I'm like, I am a real designer. And I started doing knitwear, shirts, bomber jackets, trousers, jogging pants, hoodies, everything. Yeah. I produced the first ever collection that, and we actually took it to Paris Fashion Week, and we showed it to you know, all the buyers from around the world, and we got it into Barney's New York and Saks Fifth Avenue and Selfridges and Harrods and Harvey Nichols. All these stores came and bought it, so that really put Reiss on the map as a more than just an independent retailer. It put it on as a designer brand. And then
I remember those times, because we come from the kind of same era. I remember that, because suddenly Reiss shops popped up on every high street all across the country, didn't they? It was like, you know, and I remember that it was definitely a standout brand. So that was you behind that. God, I've worn many of your items in my years.
It's funny you should say that, because a lot of people, when I meet them, say, and then they look into my history and they say, do you know what? When I was a kid, I used to wear everything from Reiss. And then I discovered All Saints, and I started shopping at All Saints.
Yeah.
And then about 15 years ago, I kind of went off it, and I started wearing this other label called Bollingaro Trevor. And I've realized that you were the founder, the designer behind all three of them. So you've dressed me all of my life. And that happens quite often.
I can definitely say the same. So that's very, very interesting. I mean, now not so much, because now I buy all, well, we'll get into that in a minute, but now I kind of buy stuff that's, you know, upcycled or repurposed or secondhand. So, but we'll get into that in a minute. So in many ways, we want to get into the kind of, I guess, the negative aspects of the fashion industry and fast fashion, which has become such an important movement, if you like, of rebels kind of, you know, standing up against the Primarchs of the world, and, you know, these brands that make things for you to wear once. And, you know, it all got a bit crazy. Before we do that, because I want you to just share with me what you think the problems are with the industry. Do you look back on your life now and think, I've actually been part of this problem? Or have you always been on the kinder side of fashion? Where would you position yourself historically? Not where you are today, but historically.
Yeah. I mean, so I get asked this a lot, because some people say, well, they look at All Saints now and they say, well, you know, you created that monster. But when I was still involved with All Saints, and the main reason that I sold it is I used to do about 50% of the production in the UK. I used to buy from British fabric mills. I used to make in the East End of London with little factories that they do all the production for Glover All. But back in those days, they used to make Roland Murray, and then they made Victoria Beckham, and Burberry and people like that. So I used to do about 50% of the production in the UK. And then I used to make the jersey in Portugal, and I would make suits in more formal wear in Italy. And I had two business partners. One was a silent partner, and one was a retail director. The ex-retail director from Reiss joined me at All Saints. And he used to look after the day-to-day running of the shops. Now, those two sold out to a guy who was the husband of Karen Millen. And he came into the business, and because he became a majority shareholder, and he was determined to roll the business out and scale it much bigger than I had. I mean, we were doing 15, 20 million turnover, but he had this idea where he would move all the production to China, and I was furious, and him and I were at loggerheads, and in the end, I decided to get out because I didn't want any part of it. And I think one of the main reasons I didn't want to do it is I'd always loved the idea of, you know, working closely with and keeping it British and keeping it European. Forget that. I mean, sustainability wasn't even a word then. Nobody really knew about it at that time. But I've always been obsessed about waste and about how much waste that we all have. I mean, I've always worn vintage clothes. I mean, that's where all the ideas came from for all scents and grease. And
listen, let's hold it there. I've got to cut to a commercial break. I hate doing this because I hate cutting into you mid-flow, but actually it's perfect because you brought in the word sustainability. You brought in actually, you know, how you're getting back to your vision. Let's cut to a commercial break. We're going to come back afterwards and we're going to continue this bit because this is getting into the problems and the issues. Brilliant. Bear with us. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Jarvis Smith. This is Lean Into Clean on UK Health Radio. I'm here with Stuart Trevor. I mean, he's the founder of All Saints. He's got this massive vision to become the most sustainable brand in the world, which we're going to get into. But we're talking about sustainable fashion. We've heard a little bit of, you know, his background and how he became kind of recognized as a leading designer. But you just very kindly started talking about, you know, a horrible situation where somebody became a majority shareholder of All Saints, started to make decisions that you weren't in control of, and you made, you know, a very purposeful decision not to proceed with that, which I think is gallant, hugely respectful of that decision, but it must have been tough. Tell me, first of all, how did you go through that process? Like, what was the thought process for you, and what was going through your mind at the time? Because you must have been thinking, bloody hell, this is my empire, somebody's wrecking it, I can't change it, I've got to get out. I mean, that must have just felt awful.
I think there was a lot of things that went on around that time. We'd also had we'd had those four bombers that blew the people, you know, the 7/7 bombers that blew themselves up
in London.
I'd moved my HQ to Spitalfields, and the morning that happened, I was in there, and some of the staff didn't turn up, and Aldgate East was where one of the bombs went off, and I knew that some of the staff would come from there. Some of, you know, some kid was coming in at work and they never turned up, and I was like, I'm waiting to hear from, you know, people that didn't. And I remember thinking at the time, God, if this could carry on, and unfortunately nobody was harmed, that they were just stuck on the tube, not on, you know, the stations in Cannon Street or whatever the stations before, so everything. But I remember thinking at the time, I might have to ring someone's parents or you know, just, I remember thinking at the time as well, God, I really would hate it if all of that went off, and I was kind of concerned about what was going on in the world. I'd seen the country go through, you know, recessions in the past. And I just thought, God, maybe it's a good time to get out. And fortunately, that was in 2007, and then in 2009 there was this huge global crash, and so I escaped that. I kind of, like, it was a good time to get out. So yeah. I think at the time, it took me quite a while to get over it, because I didn't want to sell in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I loved everything I was doing at All Saints.
Yeah, I bet you did.
But it was we were just, it was, you know, I couldn't do anything wrong at that time. Virtually every single time we'd launched a collection, the sales just kept going up and up, and we were, but it also got a bit frightening. I was producing in the beginning, you know, a couple of hundred leather jackets, like the biker jacket. We'd make a couple of hundred of them, and then it would sell out in a day. And so I'd make 500, you know, be ordering 500, and we'd get them in, and they'd sell out in a week. And then I'd be ordering 1,000 or 2,000. I remember thinking at the time, it's all, you know, that was just that one style, but there was other styles. I just read, it was all became a bit kind of like, I'm just a kid from a council estate in Dundee. All of a sudden, I'm ordering thousands of, and I'm responsible for 300 people, you know, and I had 15 shops. Or it was just all kind of like it was just all too much. And I remember at the time thinking, and you know, also every single penny that I'd made, I put back into the business. I'd never really, taken any big payout or anything. So when I was when I did the deal and I got offered, you know, a sum of money, I was like, do you know what? I've never had any money in my life. Maybe that would be quite nice. So in the end, it all worked out fine. I'm not really bothered about money, and I never bought myself a single thing. Like, you know, people were going at me, oh, you could get yourself an Aston Martin or a Ferrari. And I'm like, who's? I'm never going to drive a car like that. I would just feel like a right knob, you know. But
I'll stick to my chopper, thanks.
yeah, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, well, I had a, I've got a, I still got it. I've got the, there's a beautiful old Volvo P1800
Oh,
from the
nice.
late 60s that Simon Templar is a James Bond type character.
Oh, it's from Saints. What is it? It
Well,
was
that's partly where the name All
the
Saints comes
Saints.
from. And
Got
I
it.
still have that car. I'm having it re sprayed this weekend, actually.
Oh,
I'm
lovely.
getting it remade. But I've owned that car since I was 20 years old. So yeah, I never needed to.
Oh, nice. Will you take me for a spin in it when I come down to London?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to take you up on that. Okay, look, this is brilliant. I want to get into the juicy stuff, but it's really important for our listeners to hear the background, where you came from, what you've achieved, why you came out of it. Sounds like you survived with a big smile, which is fantastic. Let's get into the next phase of your life, which I know you've already started, but our listeners might not know about it yet. But before we do that, I always ask all of our guests who are courageous, brilliant, pioneering legends, as far as I'm concerned, to give me a couple of songs that are soundtracks either to the climate crisis or to their kind of lives. In your case, I asked you for songs that were soundtracks to the climate crisis. You gave me two brilliant songs. We're going to play the first one now, and then we're going to get into what you're up to at the moment. So tell me the song you've chosen. Don't tell me why you chose it. Tell me the song you've chosen. We'll listen to it and ask you at the end why you chose that song.
Is the first song David Bowie?
Yep. Is that the one? If that's the one you want.
Yeah, that's the first one, and it's
Yeah. This
Changes
is
by
Changes by David Bowie. Such a great record. Thank you for choosing that. And that came from my producer as well, who also said, thank you for choosing that record. Why did you choose that record? Tell us.
I think David Bowie is as I remember as a little boy, hearing David Bowie on my Auntie Joyce's old teak stereogram in the corner of her house in Broughty Ferry in Dundee, and running over and kneeling down and listening to the words, and it was really inspirational to me. And I asked my mum, who, you know, mum, who's David Bowie? And she said, oh, well, I'll show you him. He's on Top of the Pops tonight. So we watched him, and he had a pair of
Oh,
red boots
brilliant.
on. And I drove my mum insane to get me a pair of red boots, and she bought me them. We had no money back in those days, but she managed to, a single mum with four kids, but she managed to get a pair of red boots for me. And I only know this because my family took the Mickey out of me for years, because I polished them every night and slept with them under my pillow and all that. And it kind of. I wanted to be David Bowie. I just thought he was this inspirational character. But the lyrics to that song in particular really resonated with me. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through. And it reminds me of you know, my kids nowadays and what's going on in the world with fast fashion and mountains of cheap polyester crap going into landfill. Every 7 seconds, there's a pile of clothes the height of Mount Everest going into landfill. And we need to do something about it. We need to persuade people that there's an alternative to buying this crap. And we need to persuade these fast fashion companies as well to move more towards natural fibers and stop just, I mean, we've kind of in the last 10, 15 years since it all came about. In the beginning, it was all great. It was like, you know, there's a children's fairy tale about the magic porridge pot, and there's people in the village are starving, and this porridge pot comes around and they're churning out porridge. And in the beginning, it was great. It fed all the poor people in the village. And then after a year, there's so much porridge, it actually engulfed all the houses in the village. And that's what fast fashion's done. It when it came along, I think people were excited about the fact that they could afford to look like they were buying designer clothes. But it's kind of like a race to the bottom now, isn't it? With Shein and Temu and these Chinese, you know, brands that are flooding every single time you pick up your phone, every time you look at anything, it's there's adverts for this crap, and it's people our kids have been brainwashed into believing that they don't have enough and that they need more, and it's just more and more, and it's all. It's crap. And, you know, if we don't do something about it now, what's it going to be like in 50 years' time? You know, the mountains and mountains of cheap polyester crap going into landfill.
Yeah. No, it's great that you've addressed it. And there was a moment, wasn't there? I remember you telling me when we had our first chat, there was a moment where didn't your daughter or you raise something, a question about this with your daughter? And she kind of, you know, found it difficult to believe that there was that much waste happening.
She couldn't believe. She'd read a statistic on my deck that said every 7 minutes, pile of clothes, the height of Mount Everest is going into the landfill. She said, "Dad, you can't lie." And I said, "What? What are you talking?" She goes, "You can't write things like that." And I'm like, "That's not a lie. Why do you think it's a lie?" She said, "If that was the truth, no kid on the planet would shop at Primark or H&M or Zara or Shein or Temu. You know, this is." That's unbelievable. And I showed her where I'd got the statistic from. And she was like, "What are we going to do?" I said, "We're going to launch a clothing brand that doesn't produce any clothes." So exactly what I did.
That's brilliant. I love that. We're going to get into that now. We're going to have to cut to a commercial break in a minute. So we're not going to get into it too much. But just for the listeners that are listening out there and listening to what Stuart's saying, and of course, fashion industry is, I think it's the second biggest polluter on the planet after energy. So it's a big deal. There was in 1945, just after the World War, there was an economist stroke. I'm not sure what you call him in today's market, but a PR person, probably. He was asked to create a system, and the system was built on this principle. His name's Victor Lebeau. He said, "Our enormously productive economy demands that we make consumption our way of life, that we convert the buying and use of goods into rituals, that we seek our spiritual satisfaction, our ego satisfaction in consumption. We need things consumed, burned up, replaced and discarded at an ever accelerating rate." That was created post-war in the Industrial Revolution. So nearly every business concept in universities, certainly up until the last 2 or 3 years, have been built on that system. It's an economy that's killing us. We're seeing that now. So you've now addressed the problem. You've got this brand that you are building. It's already built, but you obviously want it to scale. We need to talk about how to scale without being part of the problem, number one. But firstly, I want to hear all about it. So what's the brand called?
It's called Stuart Trevor.
Nice.
I wanted it to just be called ST, like my initials. But I found that you couldn't register st.com, and I had registered the name Stuart Trevor because I didn't want anyone else, you know, going off and using it. And I showed the first label had ST on the front and it had Stuart Trevor on the back. And everybody that came in to look at the first pieces that I made said, I really wanted to have a Stuart Trevor.
Your
name in it. And I was like, really? I never liked my name. But apparently, that's what we've got now. That's the name. And it's available at stuarttrevor.com.
Let's come back to that. We're going to cut to a commercial break. So stuarttrevor.com, if you want to have a quick look while you're listening to the adverts, don't go away. We're going to talk about the brand, why it's different, how it's going to be the most sustainable brand in the world. And let's get into some of that. We'll be back in a minute.
the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm here with Stuart Trevor. This is Jarvis Smith on Lean Into Clean with UK Health Radio. Stuart, if you haven't been listening, is the founder of All Saints, has been in and out of that business now, and now has set up his own clothing brand, designer label, called Stuart Trevor. So if you want to check it out, go to stuarttrevor.com. I've just been having a look at the site while the adverts are on. Stuart, tell me about the philosophy of your new project.
So about 4 or 5 years ago, I started working with young startup brands. I was mentoring them, basically. They people approached me and asked me if I would, you know, give them some advice or help them. Somebody came to me who was running a thing called an Impact Accelerator. It's a guy called Gordon Eichhorst, and he's an ex-NASA rocket scientist. And he told me that he runs this Impact Accelerator, and I didn't know what he was talking about. And I Googled it, thinking it must be the brakes on the rocket or something to stop it from impacting. And then I realized that it's the accelerator bit means he helps businesses that have a positive social or environmental impact to become a success. So yeah. I started working with them, and there was a bakery that employ victims of domestic abuse. There was a coffee roasters that employ ex-offenders, train them to become baristas so that they, you know, don't go back into crime and end up back in jail. And there was fashion brands that were taking vintage jeans, denim, and repurposing them. And I got chatting with them, and I learned more and more about how bad the fashion world is, and how that there's so, it's, you know, conspicuous consumption. When we were kids, people wouldn't really understand that, you know, but when we were kids, there weren't really thousands of shops and shopping malls and online shopping and brands Topshop was a little, yeah, huge company, or H&M. There were a few stores around the world. There weren't these huge multi-billion dollar businesses like
Next was about the biggest thing going, wasn't it, at the time? Maybe Next or Burton's or something.
Yeah, remember when that started? It was just a one little shop, and it kind of transformed the high street. But now it produces, I don't know, a million garments a day or something. There's now 100 billion garments a year, they reckon, in production. That's 14, 15 pieces for every human being on the planet. Well, of course, that's included little kids in Africa that, you know, parents, you know, can't afford to feed them or whatever. There's just far too much. So what I thought about was, over the years, I used to go to warehouses that are full of like vintage American military and buy these, you know, shirts from a Vietnam War era period and that John Lennon used to wear as a protest against war. And I used to be able to go and get these garments, and I would take them to factories in Italy and ask them to copy the fabric or, you know, replicate the garment and take it to a laundry and ask them to wash the garment so it looks like that. And, you know, these garments used to get the creative juices flowing, and now they are the creative juice. So I cut out the middleman. I just, because I've gone back to these warehouses, they've still got mountains of ex-military clothing in them and mountains of denim. And, you know, there's just so much. There's just so much, in Africa. We know now, there's been a lot about this in papers and all that, but a couple of years ago, nobody really knew this. There are shiploads, container loads, container ships going to Africa and to Ghana and to South America or Indonesia, and they're ending up with millions, piles and millions of garments going into landfill. The Africans used to call it dead man's clothing because they couldn't believe that these container loads of garments would come and arrive in Africa, and that people would give away beautiful quality clothes, because you know they would be convinced, well, they must have died, and that's why. But it isn't. It's people buy things, wear it twice or three times or whatever, and never wear it again. Everyone's got a wardrobe full of clothes that they don't wear. When we were kids, we would have our favorite items, wouldn't you? You'd have your favorite pair of jeans. I had what, one pair of jeans and one pair of trousers, I would wear them again and again. You know, now people have got 10, 20, 30 pairs of jeans and four leather jackets and 12 suits and 30 shirts and 50 t-shirts, you know. So what I wanted to do was take other people's waste and customize it, upcycle it, and turn it into something really beautiful. So that's what I started doing about, well, it was actually virtually a year ago today. We launched it, and I was sitting here in my studio, and I decided I was going to launch it during London Fashion Week. So I think it was probably exactly this, like a week before, I put it on social media, on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. And I don't have millions of followers. I've got 5 or 6, 7,000 followers, whatever. And I put it out saying, I'm going to launch a clothing brand that doesn't produce any clothes. We're going to take existing clothes and we're going to cut them up and patch them and print them and embroider them and hand paint on them. And you know, I'd cut Hawaiian shirts up and split them in two and then sewed them back together and made really interesting looking clothes. And I said, we're going to launch it on at London Fashion Week, and send me an RSVP to my info@stuarttrevor.com. And we had 300 or 400 responses. And actually on the day, about 700 people turned up, all raving about the idea. They loved the concept. They loved the idea. And they came in and it's actually, it is, I even have to say it myself, I am a blown away by what you can produce from other people's waste.
It's amazing, isn't it? There was a statistic that came out that there is enough clothes in the world today that have already been made that could actually dress the next 7 to 10 generations.
That's true, yeah. We could go 50, 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
Even 100 years. But if we never produced another garment, there's still enough to go round.
That's insane, isn't it? And that's clearly what we've got to do. So, do you think that? Do you think this will catch on? It has to, from a sustainable perspective. But you know, do you think these big brands that are turning over fast fashion are going to go, oh, let's change our business model and let's get into, you know, what this inspiration's doing?
I think so. I've been, since I launched this brand last year, I am inundated with people like yourself contacting me to come on their radio show, come on TV. I was flown down to Cannes for the Cannes Lion Festival of Creativity, and I spoke on the stage with the PR and marketing director of Patagonia, which is
brilliant,
supposedly recognized as the world's most sustainable brand. And we talked about this issue. And I was on the same stage that Elon Musk had been on the day before. And the organizers reckon that the talk that I gave with the guy from Patagonia and the British Fashion Council was the most talked about event of the whole of the Cannes Lion Film Festival, Creativity Festival. So, it's become kind of like, you know, the probably the most important topic of discussion in newspapers and film and television, and everybody talks about it. But and everybody that comes to see what I'm doing and what I've created is blown away by it. We got invited to St. Louis in Missouri, in the USA, to do a runway show. They invite people like that. They invite us because I bring an international vibe to what would be a local fashion show. And I went over there and I invited the guys that run the coolest vintage shops in the town. And they were like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they didn't really get what I was talking about. And they came to see the show. And when they saw the garments on a runway show, they were completely blown away, because what we've created from other people's waste looks, I mean, the sustainability bit is not even the most important bit. It's the fact that the clothes look amazing, and they look really, even if I say so myself, they look really interesting. People are blown away by it. And then they realize, do you know what? I'm never going to go shopping again in like a normal, you know, I'm never going to buy anything new again. I'm always going to buy either vintage or secondhand or swap clothes. We encourage people to bring clothes to us, and we give them a credit note, and they can swap it for things that they see in our studio or in our shop or any events that we do. Because we're not trying to make money. We're not trying to, it's not a shoot all about money or whatever like that. I have currently 3-4 different interns that are coming here from St. Martin's, from London College of Fashion, from one's from Manchester, one's from Derby. And I'm kind of like showing them what we could do with other people's waste rather than, you know, buying tons of fabric and creating brand new garments.
Absolutely brilliant.
It's all about educating the kids.
Yeah, and you know what? You do it so well. I mean, clearly you're an inspiration, because anybody... I can remember being at college. I went to London College of Printing and Distributive Trades, which was in Elephant and Castle, which is part of the St. Martin's network. And I can remember that the fashion kids at that time, and I was, I'm probably not too dissimilar age to you. The kids then were experimenting with, you know, how do we create fashion that's not going to be in the mess that it's in now? But yet it doesn't seem to have taken off as an industry. So it needs to be somebody like you, iconic, that has history, that people will respect, to turn things around. And you know what, Stuart, I absolutely salute you. The clothes are brilliant. If you want to check out Stuart's clothes, go to stuarttrevor.com. He does have an Instagram page, and that's Stuart Trevor. I think it's official, but anyway, really easy to find. Support him. Get behind him. If you want to buy some garments that are to last, you know, a lifetime, that are unique, that are not contributing to become a problem, but are a solution to one of the biggest, most awfully impactful industries on the planet, the fast fashion industry, then Stuart Trevor is the man to get behind and support. We're going to play your second song. We're going to play it to the end of the show. Is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners as a kind of legacy piece that you haven't really thought about, but you think it's important for you to say? And then from that, we'll go straight into your song, and that will be the end of the show. But this is your moment just to kind of have your new statesman pitch.
When I started doing this, I didn't actually mean for it I wasn't even going to turn it into a business. I was just going to invite people to my studio, and hopefully a few of them would buy things from me, because people came, like, as I said, to the launch party this time last year, London Fashion Week. 700 people turned up, and they were, and I think we did it on the Friday, and on the Sunday we were sat at the desk here, and we thought, this could change the world. People are absolutely loving what we're doing. So we set up the website then and started working on how am I going to turn it into, you know, something that we can, you know, use to encourage other people to do what we're doing. And sometimes I wake up in the morning, I think, what on earth am I doing? Because it's such hard work. It's a real, it's a work of, I mean, you have to be very passionate about what you do to be able to do something like this. And I am very passionate about it. I really honestly believe that by encouraging kids to upcycle and create something out of other people's waste, maybe we can, you know, sort out the situation. We launched a t-shirt a couple of weeks ago with an FFF. So I'll say flip fast fashion. It doesn't say that. It says something else, but I don't know whether I'm allowed to.
No, the swear word that we're not allowed to say on air.
And I was worried that people, friends of mine that work in fast fashion, I know people are 30 years in the industry, And they came to my event last week and they bought one of the t-shirts. And I said, I was really worried you were going to like really, you know, hate the idea of a flip fast fashion t-. And they were like, mate, I'm in that. I didn't 20 years ago. I was in designer clothing. He said, but the market has forced us all into, we don't want to work in fast fashion. No one does. We all hate it. It's horrendous. And it's like a race to the bottom with this Shein and Temu. I've come in, even the Primarks and the Zaras and the H&Ms, they're all panicking now. And that's why they're now trying to get themselves on the runway at New York Fashion Week and London Fashion Week, because they realize that it's a race to the bottom and they want to elevate themselves. And there's regulations that are coming in from the EU, and it will happen in America, that they are going to have to change. And there's also, I mean, you read about it, there's also more and more and more people that are moving over into buying vintage or secondhand, and it's going to get better. So the song that I chose is Don't Give Up by Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush, because I love them both, and I sometimes I wake up in the morning and I think, don't give up, just carry on, because we'll get there. We can create a better world.
I love it. Stuart Trevor, you've been an absolute legend. Your passion project, I think, is going to change the world. I love the clothing that you're doing. I've loved all of your brands actually since you've started. So why not follow you now as well? Listen, we're going to play your song. Thank you for joining us. We're going to have you back on in a few months because I want to see what's going on with you, because I can see this is going to move quickly. Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Cheers. Have a good
Pleasure.
day.
Yeah, cheers, and you.
A lovely life.